21 years after he left 24 Sussex Drive, 4.5 years after his death, and after countless books on his politics and life, Pierre Elliott Trudeau remains a fascinating figure in the Canadian consciousness. A new book attempts to reveal just a little bit more about the man, culling together some wonderful, heartfelt, and enlightening reminiscences from a variety of people who viewed the man up close and from afar. Pierre, colleagues and friends talk about the Trudeau they knew, is edited by Nancy Southam, who was born to some fairly prominent people in this province. She's the granddaughter of H.R. McMillan, and her parents are Gordon and Jean Southam of newspaper fame. Though her roots are British Columbian, she resides in Montreal, where for many years her neighbor was the former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. They became close friends and frequent traveling companions. Ms. Southam has edited this wonderful new book that includes a foreword by Justin Trudeau and contributions from a remarkable list of people: John Kenneth Galbraith, Jimmy Carter, Barbara Streisand, Conrad Black, Margot Kidder, Jacques Hébert, Jean Chrétien, and many, many more. Pierre, colleagues and friends talk about the Trudeau they knew, is $37.99 Canadian, $28.95 American, and is published by McClelland & Stewart. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca Nancy Southam. Good morning, Ms. Southam.
Good morning, Joseph.
I've read the book, and it's a really remarkable book, and you wouldn't think that after so many books about Pierre Trudeau that something like this could come along and add some refreshing insight into the man. How did you set about doing this? What was the genesis for this book?
It's funny enough, I think about half the book was in my head even before I started to approach people, but I basically wrote a letter to about 300 people around the world, asking them for short anecdotes or narratives about Pierre and you know, new information that people didn't necessarily know. And I got over 200 responses, and of that, I sort of culled those down to about 150, which are in the book now.
What was the process of cutting them down? Was it for space? Was it for clarity? Was it for stuff that was too personal?
Repetition.
Really?
It was mostly repetition, or somebody had told a story, say, of Pierre's father, and I had a better one going. So it was, I suppose, you know, it was tricky in one way, because I had to make decisions constantly, but it didn't matter who you were or how famous you were or what your access to Pierre was, that's sort of real or perceived. If you had something interesting to say, then great. And if you didn't, then I'm sorry you didn't make the book. I'm actually getting hammered about that right now.
Oh, really?
People that aren't in the book, but anyway.
Alan Fotheringham, who you used to work for him, right?
Yeah, I worked for him at CKVU out here in Vancouver.
He writes in one of his columns, it was recent columns, that he's not in the book because you wouldn't pay him. Is that true?
Yeah.
So
good of him to admit that, but he was the only one lots of journalists and news photographers I approached that even, you know, hinted at money. But all the contributors gave their pieces, and none of them were paid, and but he seemed to have a problem with that.
But it was I read from the last essay in the book, I think it's the afterword or whatever you call it, that it was a very painful process, that it took a lot of time culling all of these pieces together. One contributor called you Madam Slave Driver.
That was Alan McKechnie, yeah. It was a very apt title by the end of it, because I spent, I guess it was a year ago now, was putting the book together, you know, into chapters, but I noticed that I had about 40 people who I desperately needed for the book, and they had not finished their pieces, so that was my sort of slave driving era, and most of them were closest to Pierre, and they found it, like myself, very difficult, and, you know, the reminding of all the memories, and then having to put it down in print.
Who isn't in the book that you wanted to have?
Brian Mulrooney, I very much wanted to get, and I thought at one point I did, but I had an idea for him, and that was just to talk about Pierre as his father, because they both obviously, you know, lived at 24 Sussex with young children, and he and I had a conversation, I don't know, the summer that Pierre was dying, and he told the story about about Pierre, and I thought, that's perfect, that's what I want in the book. You know, we won't get political, and I know you're doing your memoirs, and you want to save everything for that. So I'm sorry he's not in there, because there's other conservative prime ministers in there.
What about Margaret Trudeau?
No, I said to all, you know, I said to Sash and Justin and to Margaret, if you'd like to write something, great. But, you know, on the other hand, she had written a couple of books, and, you know, both the Sash and Justin, I mean, you know, what do they pick? They could do books themselves. So it wasn't essential from the beginning that I had them in the book.
One contributor wrote of getting to know Trudeau, and it's a wonderful, wonderfully evocative phrase, and that's the softer protocol of private conversation.
Mm.
There is
a
different,
isn't that a great line?
Isn't it? Yeah. There is a difference, though, if you had that kind of relationship with Trudeau, as opposed to if you were across two sword lengths apart in the House of Commons, or if you were in the press. He really was a different person when you got to know him away from the spotlight, was he not?
Oh, very much so. I mean, he was very, very, he could be very quiet and shy, or he could be, you know, hysterically funny and, you know, laughing out loud. He was a horrible joke teller, but he, you know, he loved hearing jokes or, you know, double entendre. Yes, I mean, I think most of us are different in private with our friends than we are with, you know, the public or the media. It's not unique to Pierre.
Did he like gossip?
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't spend much time doing that with him, but in fact, Ron Graham, one of the contributors, says, you know, he would have lunch with him, and that, you know, was never discussed.
The other thing, too, that the perception of Trudeau was that he was kind of cheap. I got that sense in one of the essays in the Canoe chapter, but reading your piece, Ron Graham's piece, B.W. Powell's piece, he didn't really seem that cheap.
I can't, I've been saying for, you know, weeks now on this media tour, but he and I would often have lunch or dinner, you know, all over the place, but I also occasionally would just have a big fight with him at the table over the bill, because I didn't see it right that he should always be buying my meals, and I, probably five times I won that war, but there, you know, the perception is that, you know, he, when you went out to lunch or dinner with him, and Conrad Black says that, you know, he always, Conrad had to pay the bill, but I think it sort of depended on who you were and what the occasion was, and, you know.
The timeline that you cover, is this Trudeau in his later years, is this Trudeau from the beginning of his life?
Well, originally I wanted to do the whole arc of his life, but I couldn't find enough people from, you know, early on in his life, and they were dead, and so it sort of, yeah, I guess it sort of begins with one or two exceptions, you know, from the early 60s. There is a certain emphasis in the book on his years after he retired from politics, you know, 84 through 2000, but that's probably because I, you know, I was around then, and we were neighbors, and I just knew who he hung out with, and where he traveled, and but no, I mean, there's a whole chapter on, you know, his canoe travels with his buddies, and, you know, his world travels, and so it's a little bit heavier on, you know, 84 to 2000, but I think most of those are new stories, so.
The Conrad Black piece, was that difficult to get, considering his personal troubles?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, he was one I just kept after and after and after, and obviously, you know, I had to wait because he had a lot more heavy-duty stuff on his desk to get done, but I thought he was very generous to get that in.
What about Barbara Streisand? Was that hard to get?
No, it wasn't. It was one of those things where, you know, my friend knew a friend of hers, and so that's how the connection was made, but no. I came in. I wasn't even expecting it, but it came in a lot sooner than I imagined.
How did she take to being edited? Because you edited these pieces, I assume, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been sort of dining out on that story. It wasn't so much her as dealing with her agent / lawyer. What I had done with contributors, I said, you know, all these pieces will be edited. You know, you're not unique in the book. And if you want to see the edited version of your piece, you're welcome to. And the idea was, you know, here's what's happened to it, here's where it's going in the book, and blah. And with Streisand's agent, he sort of flipped out and said, you know, you've edited her piece, and you cannot run it unless you return it to its original condition, and every word must be in. And so I thought, God, well, fine, you know, I'll do that, but it's going to make her look rather silly. So I did that, sent it back, and then he said, okay, now you can't run this piece until we accept the photograph and okay the photograph you're using in your book. And well, two points here. One is I didn't even have a photograph. And secondly, nowhere in any of the documents that contributors signed did it say they had approval of photos. So I went back at him on that, and we had, you know, ferocious email wars, and I finally killed the piece because I was just getting nowhere. That was last summer. And then I just, you know, dropped that and thought, well, too bad, but I'm not going to, you know, be pushed around like this. So I think about a month later, he came back on his knees and said, well, as a matter of fact, you know, it's okay and you're right. And I'm sure by that time, Barbara had sort of found out what was going on. So
one photograph that is in the book is that of your mother and Pierre Trudeau.
Oh, yeah, isn't that lovely? I love that. She's my mother, and I adore her, but it's a great shot. She's looking at it.
She's sort of googly eyes at Pierre Trudeau. And I think that's what a lot of people had when they met him, right?
Yeah.
What was it about Trudeau that she liked? I mean, obviously his politics, but beyond that, as a person to have praise.
Well, actually, she didn't like his politics. She was
really?
Conservative voter. She
I
says
see.
That in
yeah.
her piece. I love the irony of that. I don't know. I mean, she just found him, you know, very attractive and charming and handsome and you know, the way a lot of women saw him.
Yeah, Margot Kidder is another woman that was in Trudeau's life, and she writes a very personal piece and quite revealing, I thought.
Yeah.
How did you manage to get that out of her? Was she willing to go so personal in the piece?
I didn't expect anything like that from any of his girlfriends, but I guess she's just more open and honest than most people. But in terms of getting her to write something, no, it wasn't difficult at all.
The first chapter you read about Trudeau and his relationship with his religion, his faith. I told you yesterday that I've read the chapter twice. I went back to it last night, and there's just so much that I don't know where to begin. The first question I'll ask, and it may be a rather silly question, but he had a great deal of respect for the protocol of the church, and he was deeply religious. How do you reconcile that with the sort of the political view of Trudeau, who was, you know, who was liberal, small L, big L liberal, who went around saying the state had no place in the bedrooms of the nation? Yet, is there something that can be reconciled between those two sides, or?
Well, I actually don't see the connection between his faith and, you know, that quote about the bedrooms of the nation. But maybe I'm being too literal.
Well, I just think that he liberalized the laws on abortion, on homosexuality, on divorce,
mm-hmm.
And those tend to, if you look at the current political situation, run contrary to, I would say, religious views and. Let's say the United States with George W. Bush. Yeah.
Well, are you saying? I mean, you're saying him as a Roman, practicing Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
Those wouldn't be, you know, views of the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
Well, I know a lot of I have a lot of Catholic friends that would agree with all that. So I don't think he's unique in that way. What I would say about his faith is, you know, like most of us, it's a very private matter. And there's perception out there now that, you know, people are surprised to learn that he was a very devout believer. And I think that came up when his state funeral was broadcast, which was a very traditional Roman Catholic service. But for people to be surprised that, you know, he had a great faith, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, it's just, it's there, and it was true.
It was hard to come up with that question. But the one thing, though, about his faith and his religion that I found interesting was that a lot was said when he died that he was reeling over the death of his son, Michel. You write in the book that it was, and that his death was not brought upon by the mourning of the loss of his son, rather a crisis in his faith.
Mm-hmm.
Would you elaborate on that a bit? I mean, how deep was this crisis?
Well, I'm not going to elaborate more than what I write in the book, but, you know, like any parent who's lost a child, I mean, and who's a practicing believer, I mean, there's no surprise there that you would, you know, yell and scream at God and lose your faith. You know, in his case, he was a 80-something-year-old man, and you know, his 19-year-old son was killed. And Pierre's saying, you know, how can this happen? Why didn't God take me, not my young son, you know, who's got a whole life ahead of him? Having said that, I spent a lot of time with him, you know, in those last few years, and I was studying theology with the Jesuits in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and we just had this ongoing dialogue, and I assigned him some homework, as I say, and told him to read the book of Job, which is, I think, the most difficult book in the entire Bible. And the point being was that Job was going through the same, you know, panic and loss of faith and where is God and, you know, does he care and all that, as Pierre was. And the reason I said to look at the book of Job is because by the end of it, one interpretation is that God is silent in the book of Job, but he's present.
And he regained his faith at the end of his life?
No, absolutely. I mean, surely and much more stronger and more vital, yeah.
Now,
I mean, of course he was, you know, absolutely heartbroken over Misha's death, but I think it's Alan McKechnie, and his piece in the story was one of the last times he saw Pierre. Pierre said to Alan, you know, I've had a really hard time of it, but, you know, I'm getting better.
Now, this mourning of Michel, and obviously it's expected, but Ron Graham writes that he erected impenetrable barriers early in his life, and that had to do with his father's death.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never pierced again until Michelle's death.
Mm-hmm. All true.
How do you explain, I mean, this is something to talk about there, and I really don't know how to get at it. Trudeau was very strong, wasn't he, emotionally? And he was very guarded, right?
Yeah, and, you know, he had a sort of regimen that he kept to, and he was very tough on himself, you know, intellectually and physically. And, you know, there were certain people who were close to him that never, you know, really got underneath all that. And I fortunately was able to, certainly on a theological level after Misch died. But he was very disciplined in everything, you know, including everything. But,
did he have indulges? Did he indulge himself?
Chocolates.
Really?
Caviar.
And fine wine and things like that?
Huh?
Fine wine?
Yeah, there's this perception out there that he, you know, was a teetotaler. But he wasn't, you know. He wasn't, you know, didn't drink a six-pack a day, but he certainly enjoyed good French and Italian wine.
Now, you'd go to Mass with him, and you'd travel with him all over the world. Do you miss him?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Did you think in writing this book that you've been able to, I would say, bring him back a bit and remember him?
Well, I mean, one hopes, yeah. And what I was trying to do was show the more personal side of Pierre that a lot of people knew, but not, you know, the general Canadian public. And I hope that, you know, I've added to the historical record of Pierre by showing him to be a human being and, you know, with all his foibles.
You've been going across the country with this book, promoting it. What have people said about it who've read it? And have they changed their view of Trudeau a bit because you do go personal where no one else has previously?
Well, actually, I've really only heard from contributors. The book's only been out about 10 days, and I haven't really heard outside of a couple of reviews, which have been positive. I haven't sort of met the reader on the street that has had a chance to read it. For one thing, Chapters is not even carrying the book. They were late ordering it, and I mean, for instance, here in Vancouver, I'm trying to find it, and there's one copy left at Hager Books.
Really?
So yeah, we have a slight distribution problem going right now, but. It really has taken off. It's on the bestseller list after a week, and all of the independent bookstores in Canada, which I cannot thank enough, have supported this, you know, without Chapters selling one copy.
Well, I do congratulate you for really a wonderful book, and thank you for joining us today. And I do recommend it to people listening to us to buy this book, because I know there's a lot of books about Trudeau, and you could, you know, go broke buying them all, but this is one that you could get, because this is, I found it, for me at least, spiritually satisfying. And so, Nancy, thanks again for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Joe.
And the book is called Pierre, Colleagues and Friends Talk About the Trudeau They Knew, $37.99 Canadian, $28.95 American, published by McClelland and Stewart, the editor, Nancy Southam, here on thecommentary.ca. I am Joseph Plunham.